Today's shiur is Masechet Ksubos, Daf Tzadik Ches, and we will begin on Daf Tzadik Zayin Amud Beis, in the middle of the Amud, the Mishnah. As we have been learning in the previous Mishnah, the halacha is that an almana has the right to sell off assets from a husband's estate, assets that belong to the Yesoimim, for Mezoinus. For Ksuba, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, there was a Machlokes. The Tanakhama said that for Ksuba also, she doesn't need authorization from Beis Din, she could sell those assets. Whereas Rav Shimon said that if she's only selling off assets for Ksuba payment, that may only be done with Beis Din's permission. Says the Mishnah, Machra Ksubasa or Miktasa, if a woman sold all or part of her ksuba, mishkna ksubasa or miksasa, or if she pledged her entire ksuba as a security for a loan, or part of it, nasna ksubasa la'achra miksasa, or if she gave her ksuba to someone else as a gift, or part of it, la'timka esesha'el be'Beis Din, she may not sell the rest of the ksuba only in Beis Din. And as the Gemara will explain, this Mishnah, this din in the Mishnah, reflects the opinion of Rav Shimon, who says that if a woman sells even part of a ksuba, she's no longer entitled to mezainis. And Rav Shimon taught us in the previous Mishnah that if a woman entitlement does not include mezainis, then she may not sell the Yesoimim's assets outside of Beis Din. Taisus asks the obvious question. Taisus asks that if our Mishnah begins with the words Machra Ksubasa, that she sold her entire Ksuba, then everyone agrees that she's no longer entitled to Mezainus. So Taisus answers that when the Mishnah says the words Machra Ksubasa, it's not referring to situation that she sold the entire Ksuba. For we know that in the ksuba there are two parts. There's the ikar ksuba, the basic ksuba, the mana masayim, and then there's toisus ksuba. If a husband voluntarily adds an obligation, says toisus, when our Mishnah says machra ksubasa, it's referring to a situation where she sold the mana masayim, but she did not sell the toisus ksuba. And that's what we'll have a machloikus of Shimon Chachamim, if such a woman is still entitled to panasa. The Meiri explains that our Mishnah is referring both to the situation that we've been discussing in this perek, where a woman becomes an almana, and she's entitled to mezainis, she's entitled to ksuba, and how she could receive those payments if the Yesoimim don't voluntarily give her what's due her. But also, says the Meiri, our Mishnah is referring to a situation where, as we have described earlier in Masechta, a woman could sometimes be still married to her husband and want to sell Porsche Haksuba B'Toivus Hanoa. And the Meiri says that the Dinim articulated in our Mishnah would be applicable under those circumstances also. Rav Yashiv makes a very interesting observation from our Mishnah. He says there's a machloikus rishonim. If a mona is moichel ha-yusaymim, that the yusaymim are obligated to pay her a ksuba, and she tells the yusaymim, I forgive you that obligation. So there's a machloikus rishonim, says Rav Yashiv, if that woman loses her rights to receive mezainis. On one hand, we know that the obligation to pay mezainis is only as long as the ksuba has not been paid. Here, in essence, the ksuba has been paid. And therefore, says the Rajba, she's not entitled to mezainis anymore. The Ran disagrees. He says that this woman was very nice. She didn't have to forgive the Yesoimim the obligation to pay the Mezainis, to pay the Ksuba, yet she did. And therefore she should not lose her right to receive Mezainis. Says Rebbe Yashiv, there's a raya to the opinion of the Ran from our Mishnah, because our Mishnah uses the words nosnik subas la'acher. So he says, why does the Mishnah use the word la'acher, that he gave it to someone else? And what is if he gave it to the assignment? Says Rebbe Yosha, because our Mishnah perhaps holds like the Ran, that if she gave the ksuba to the assignment, she still is entitled to mezainus. And that's why the Mishnah points out it's la'achir, only if it's an outside party, not the Yisayman. However, says the Mishnah, v'chachamayim, the Chacham disagree, and they hold, mecheres yafil av v'chamish apamim, she could continue selling her ksuba piecemeal 4 or 5 times, or mecheres l'mezonis l'mebezdin, and she's still entitled to mezonis until her ksuba is entirely paid out, and therefore she could sell for mezonis outside a bezdin. Although the Rishonim and the Paiskim point out that the Paiskim are concerned with the following scenario. A woman, following the opinion of the Chachamim, will get 99% of a ksuba payment. A very small amount will be left out, and she'll have the best of both worlds. She will have received essentially her ksuba payment, but since she wasn't entirely paid out, she's still entitled to mezainis. A scenario that is unacceptable. And therefore the Paiskim say, under those circumstances, we would force the almana to take her entire ksuba payment, and that the assignment should no longer have to give her mezainis. The Kosevis continue to come and say, when she sells property for mezainis, she should say lemezainis mecharti, something we learned earlier in the parak on daf tzadik vav, that they should specify what is the purpose of a sale, that in order to avoid, as we learned, people thinking that she sold all of these assets just for support, and people will call her a rafsanusasa, a woman who has a very voracious appetite. Furthermore, says the Gemara, Grusha letimkal bebezdin. A grusha should only sell for her ksuba in bezdin. And as we learned at the end of our previous shir, there are two ways of understanding this line of grusha letimkal bebezdin. One explanation follows the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the reason Chazal said that a woman could sell shalai bebezdin is kedei ein adam roitza shetizbaze ishtoi bebezdin. The person doesn't want his wife should be embarrassed by going to Bezdin. But that certainly is not the situation when she is his divorcee. And therefore, Gerusha leitimkel bebezdin. Another explanation to Gemara offered in our previous year was that this line in the Mishnah follows the opinion of Rav Shimon, who Rav Shimon holds that when a woman is only entitled to a ksuba payment and not to a mezainis payment, that selling assets for that purpose may only be done in Bezdin, and that's the situation that our Mishnah is referring to. Says the Gemara, Masnisa Mami, and as the Marit explains our Mishnah, the point of our Mishnah, he says, is not to reflect on the halacha that we just quoted, that a woman that's only entitled to a ksuba payment, according to Rav Shimon, may only sell in Bezdin. Rather, the point that our Gemara is focusing on is the halacha that we quoted in the Mishnah, that once a woman receives even just partial payment of her ksuba, she's no longer entitled to the mezainis. And asks the Gemara, whose opinion is that? Masnisan Mani? Answers the Gemara, Rav Shimon hi. It reflects the opinion of Rav Shimon. The Tanya Machr ksuba saw, if a woman sold a ksuba, or Mishkan Ksuba, she pledged the Ksuba as security. Asa Ksubasa Apaitiki Lacher, she made a Ksuba as an Apaitiki, that she said that this is where she said a creditor could collect his debt from. Ela Mezainis. She's no longer entitled to Mezainis. Divrei Rameya. But Rameya is referring to a situation where she sold or put up for security her entire Ksuba. However, Shimon Omer, even if she didn't completely sell or completely put up for security her entire ksuba, ela machtzisa, only part of it, still the halacha is of the mezonos. Says the Gemara, we know that the Torah, the pasuk in the Torah that teaches us the halacha of ksuba, is the pasuk that says kesef yishkar
Yishgoyel k'mayra psulis. Says the Gemara, we really could explain the machloikis between Rav Meir and Rav Shimon is how to define that pasuk. Lememra, the Rav Shimon sava, Rav Shimon holds, l'ayim rinan mixes kesef k'kol kesef. We don't say a portion of the silver is like the entire silver. And since if she received a partial payment, it's no longer a situation that she's owed any ksuba money. Because according to Rav Shimon, only if it's kesef, if all of the ksuba obligation is owed to her, then is she considered a woman who's owed a ksuba. If anything less than that is owed to her, it's not considered that she's owed a ksuba, and therefore she doesn't get mezainis anymore. Rabbanan Savri Amir mixes kesef k'kol kesef. Even if just a portion of the ksuba obligation is still owed to her, Rabbanan hold, it's considered like the ksuba is still owed. And since it's considered like the ksuba is still owed, she's entitled to mezainis. Ask the Gemara, we've heard just the opposite. They have a reverse opinions regarding a different pasuk. The Tanya, the pasuk says, regarding which woman may a kohen gadol marry? So the pasuk says, "V'hu isha b'psulel." So prat lebegeres shakol b'psulel. Divrei Rav Meir. Kohen Rav Meir, begeres is no longer considered a psula, and the reason is, says the Rishonim, because as a girl gets older, her psulim by themselves somewhat disintegrate. Another pshat is that a girl who experiences bia the first time when she's still young will bleed. However, a girl as she gets older, even if she never previously experienced bia, will not necessarily bleed. And therefore, a mayor considers her no longer the besula that the Torah requires a kohen gadol to marry. Rabbi Lezer and Shimon hold that a kohen gadol may marry begeres. So we see that Rabbi Lezer and Shimon Amanda Amrim that hold that even partial is considered whole, and partial psula is considered a whole psula, and Rameya holds just the opposite, that a partial psula is no longer considered a whole psula. Answers the Gemara, Hasam b'kroy pligi. Then Machloikis really evolves on how to understand the psukim. Rameya sava, Rameya holds, the pasuk says psula. Had the Torah used the word psula, then we would say, I feel a mix is psula. Even if a woman has only part of a psulim left, like a begaris. But then the Torah uses the extra word, bisuleha, to teach us adik a kulub psulim, unless she's a complete psula, which would exclude a begaris. Then the Torah continues using the extra base prefix, bibisuleha, to teach us bekadaka in, that when is a woman no longer considered a psula if she had natural, normal relations, shloi kedarka, but if the relations were not conducted in the natural way, loi, she's not disqualified from being a basula. Rav Elazar of Shimon Savri, basula shleima mashma. The word basula means a full-fledged basula. Basuleha, then the word basula comes to teach us, afilo mitzis basulim. That even partial basulim still keep her in the category of a basula. Then the word bibesuleha, the extra base prefix, to teach us sheikol besuleh kayamim, but that she should have been a woman that has a full-fledged besula, ben bekedarka, ben shloi kedarka. She should be a woman that never experienced bia, whether it was done in the natural or unnatural fashion. Says the Gemara, hahi itasa, the tasa kaspa, the kaspa beksubasa. There was a woman who seized a silver cup for her ksuba payment. But as Rashi explains, this silver cup that she seized did not cover the entire ksuba obligation. So ketava mezaini. So she requested that the yisaimim still continue supporting her. For as we learned in the Mishnah, the opinion of the chachamim is that as long as she has not been completely, a ksuba obligation has not been completely paid, she's still entitled to mezainis. Asal kameh derava. The Yisaimim, however, said that since you already received some ksuba payment, you're no longer entitled to mezainis. So they came to Rav to ask the Shaila. Amalu Yasmi, so Rav said to the Yisoyman, Zil Havalol Mezoinus, go and continue giving her Mezoinus, because less the Choshlod of Shimon, the Omar, nobody follows the opinion of Shimon that says, Loimri mixes Kesef Kol Kesef, and unless she's entirely paid out, she's in, for a Ksuba, she's still entitled to Mezoinus. And as the Mefarshim explained this Gemara, there was a debate, dispute between this woman and the Yisoyman. And the Yisoyman are the ones who are holding on to the money. And we know typically the halacha is Hamaitzi Mechaveroi Olav Haraya. However, that's only, says the Gemara, and therefore the Yisoyman said we follow the opinion of Rav Shimon and we should not have to pay for Hamazinus. Says the Gemara that that's an acceptable approach if the opinion that they're relying on is a halachically acceptable opinion. However, this was an opinion that's not accepted in halacha, less the chashlad of Shimon. We don't follow the opinion of Shimon, and you cannot rely on that opinion, the Yisoyimim, not to pay her mezainus. And as the Mefarshim continued to explain, because the Gemara thought that our Mishnah should be considered a Stam Mishnah. The opinion of Shimon, as is stated in our Mishnah, is stated without attribution, and therefore it should be considered a Stam Mishnah, that the halacha is we always follow a Stam Mishnah. Says Sayyid Mefarshim that our Mishnah should not be viewed as an independent Mishnah. Rather, our Mishnah should be viewed as a continuation of the Mishnah that we learned on Daf Tzadik Zayin Amar Aleph, where there of Shimon's name was said explicitly, and therefore our Mishnah is no longer considered a Stam Mishnah, that the Halacha follows that opinion. Says the Gemara, Shalach Lei Rabbi Brei du Rav LeRabbi Yosef. Rabbi Brei Rava asked Rabbi Yosef the following question. Mecher Shlomi Bezdin. As we've been learning from the Mishnah and the Gemara, there are situations where a woman could sell assets without court authorization for a ksuba. The question asked the Gemara is Tzricha Shvua, ain't Tzricha Shvua. So as Rishonim point out, in a situation where a woman is selling assets for Mezoinus, in a situation where she may, there is no question that she certainly may do it without a shvua. Al Gemara is referring to a situation where she's allowed to sell ksuba, and the question that the Gemara is posing is when she's selling a ksuba without court authorization, as the halacha allows her under certain circumstances, does she have to make a shvua or not? And it's interesting, machlokes rishonim, how to understand the Gemara's question, because actually there are two types of shvuas that one could consider. One is a shvua that takes place before she actually sells the assets for the ksuba. And that shvua is a shvua that she did not take anything from the Yisoyimim's assets for ksuba payment prior to this transaction that she's now going to enter. Another pshat is just the opposite, that the shvua that's under consideration is the shvua that's done after she sells these assets, and that she has to swear that she's disclosing all of the money she received for the sale of these assets, and that she didn't hold back any money without telling the assignment. That's the pshat that we're going to learn. Others learn just that the question is about the shvua after the sale. Others say that the shal of the Gemara is about the shvua before the sale. Ask the Gemara, but tibay lo chachrozo. So as Tosfos explains the Gemara's question, the Gemara many times in Shas speaks about achrozah. Achrozah was some sort of a public auction, a process of a public auction where a person could make sure that the fair value was received. So says Tosfos, our Gemara's question is, since the Gemara is only asking regarding shvua what the halacha is, it seems that it's obvious that going through a public auction process is certainly not required. And the Gemara's question is, v'tibay achroza, why not? The Ritva explains the Gemara's question somewhat differently. He says that the Gemara is saying as follows, just like we're asking a shaila regarding shvua, we should also, if a shvua is required, we should also ask a shaila if achroza is required. And furthermore, the question of achroza should be posed by the Gemara prior to posing the question about Shvua, because Achroza takes place before the Shvua, and that's why the Gemara asks for Tobai Achroza, what's the din regarding Achroza? Amalei, Achroza like come by way. Regarding Achroza, I have no question. Dom Rav Zera, Om Rav Nachman, Amon Sheshoma La'atzma, if a woman who appraised this land that she's taking for a ksuba payment and took it for herself, La'asav Le'klom, what she did is invalid. Says the Gemara, Heichi Dom, exactly what is the situation that this Rav Zera's din is applying, referring to? E the Achris, if it was a situation that there was a public auction and she paid the value that was established through this auction, so the shayla is a milo asav leklum. Why is what she did meaningless? She certainly paid the fair market value that was a term that was identified. Elalaf, it must be referring to situation the loy achros. There was no achrosa, and that's why laatzma. If she keeps it for herself, that's where the halach is. The loy asav leklum. What she did is invalid. However, hala acher, if she sold it to someone else, even though there was no achrozah, the halach would be mash asa asa, what she did would be considered halachically valid. And the Rishonim debate, why is there a nafkamina if she keeps it for herself, we were saying it's not valid, versus when she sells it to someone else, we're saying that it is valid. So there are two pshatim I saw in the Rishonim. And actually, those two pshatim are based on another shayla. Even if we'll hold, speak out to Rishonim, that achrozah, this public auction, is not required, there is a shayla, could she guess go sell it, or does she at least have to take three people to evaluate the value of this property? The Ran, and I think it's a Yerushalmi, hold that three people are always required. If so, if there were three people that evaluated the value of this field, and she sells it and buys it for herself, at that price, what's the concern? Says the Ran, that the Gemara is teaching us a very big chiddush, that for a transaction, for a sale, to be considered valid, there's a meicher and a koiner. There's a necessity for a buyer and a seller. In this case, if she's taking it for herself, she remains both the buyer and the seller. And that is unacceptable halachically. Another pshat, which is based on the opinion that we don't even have to bring any assessment to the field. The concern why she can't keep it for herself is simply because we're concerned that she underpaid to keep the field for less than it's really worth. And I actually saw interesting shayla. There was someone who was unfortunately strapped for cash, and he needed to sell his home to raise money. So he went to a broker and he said, I'd like to sell this home for $250,000. The broker comes back to him a little while later and says, I was only able to find a customer for $150,000. Given that the seller was so desperate for the money, he said, okay, I'll have to take the $150,000. Then it turns out that it was the broker himself who paid the $150,000. And then ultimately he sold the house for $250,000, profiting $100,000. And the question, and now when the original owner of the home finds out what happens, he comes to this broker and says, this is unacceptable. Says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, based on our Gemara, that here is a concern. Number one, that there's a chshad, there's a concern that the broker perhaps kept it at this low price for himself in order to realize a profit ultimately. Furthermore, there's a concern that there's no buyer and seller. The broker is the buyer and the seller. Therefore, the sale is not considered valid. Says the Gemara L'Olam D'Achros. We can, in fact, explain that Reb Zeira is referring to a situation where a public auction was indeed held. But the Amrilai, so if that's the case, why can't she keep it if she paid that price that was identified through the public auction? Because the Yisaimim, or we could tell her, Man Samlech, who is the one that appraised this land for you. And as we said, there's no buyer and seller, and therefore the sale is invalid. Kihai, when we had a following situation, there's a person who orphans animal food was left by him for safekeeping. Also, so he went and he praised it in settlement for a debt that their father had towards him for 400 zuts, and a yaker. And then the price of this animal feed went up, and come shitmei, and it was worth 600 zuz. Also come made Rav Ami, so and it came with a shout to Rav Ami, because the Yisarim said that you took 600 zuz value, not 400 zuz value. And Rav Ami said to him, Amalei man somlach, since you were both the buyer and the seller, what you did is unacceptable. The hilchsa, and the halach is, tzricha shvua, the amana does have to make a shvua, however, ve'ena tzricha achraza, achraza is not required. Says the Mishnah, amana shayis ksubas masayim, if amana ksuba was worth 200 zuz, u'machra shav amana b'masayim, we have a woman who's very talented, and she was able to sell a field that's really only worth 100 zuz for 200 zuz. Or vice versa. Shav masayim b'mana. The field that she took to sell for a ksuba payment was worth 200 zuz, but she only sold it for 100 zuz. The halach is, and the skabel ksubasa, it's considered as if her entire ksuba payment was realized. Says the Mishnah further, Haisa ksubasa mana. If the ksuba was worth a mana, machra shav a mana v'dinah b'mana. And she sold property worth 100 zuz and a dinner for 100 zuz. So she took more than she deserves, because the ksuba is only worth 100 zuz, and she took it, she took an extra dinner more than she deserved. So the halacha, according to the Tanakama, is machra batal. Since she had no right to sell the extra dinner's worth of land, the entire sale is void. And the Rishonim explain the following. They ask that in the first case of the Mishnah, why don't we have here a situation of a null? If somebody sold a $100 piece of land for $200, or vice versa, $200 piece of land for $100, it's certainly more than a sixth of differential, and it should not be acceptable. So the answer is that our Mishnah follows the opinion of Eino Nor L'Kakosh. There are no halachas of Nor applicable when we're dealing with real estate. However, here, where the woman took more than she deserved, it's not a question of Eino. Because as the Rishonim explained, a dinner is only 1% of a mana. So it's not certainly a situation of a mana, of Eino. Eino is a sixth. It's only a situation that she sold more than she had a right to, and therefore the sale is void. Says the Mishnah further, Afilo Yehimeris, even if she says, accidentally Roshim, I'll give the dinner to the Yarshim, Machra Batal. She had no right to sell this much property, and her sale is void. Shimon Gamliel Oimer, Loyal Machra Kaim, her sale stands, Achete Sheisham, unless there's enough Kitesha to Shire, unless there's enough to have in the field, Bas Teshes Kavin. Rav Shimon Gamliel says the fact that she took more than she deserved does not nullify the sale, because she reimburses the Yisayim for the extra amount. Only if the extra amount was the size of Teshes Kavin, which is a large size, therefore the Yisayim could say, we want that piece of land back and use it as a piece of property for ourselves. In fact, Rishonim point out, there will be a situation where even Rav Shimon will agree that we don't have to have a field of 9 kavin. And that is in a situation where the field that she sold, the extra portion that she sold, is next to a field that the Yisayim already own. And if we'll combine this extra piece of land with the land that the Yisayim already own, they'll have a piece of land that's 9 kavim big, an area where we could grow 9 kav, and therefore the halacha would be that the sale, that they, she would have to return that piece of land to the assignment. Begina, a vegetable patch, which is more valuable, it only has to be the area of chatzi kav. Could there be a kiva, according to a kiva, in a garden, the shear is based roiva, even the size of a quarter of a kav. Hoisek subasa abimezuz. If her ksuba obligation was 400 zuz, as Rishonim explained, we learned earlier in our Masechta that typically the ksuba of a kohen's daughter was 400 zuz, And what she did was, Machla Zebemana, Zebemana, she sold one field for mana. She sold another field for mana. And even though it's not mentioned, the Mefarshim will explain, and the third field, she also sold for mana. But the Achra, in the fourth field, she took more than she deserved. She took Yofa mana with dinner, but mana. Shel Achron, the last sale, following the opinion of the Chachamim, is bottle is void, for Shekulon, but all the previous sales, which were exactly fear, Mechron Kayim, are valid. Ask the Gemara, Mashna Shavim Asayim B'mona, why in a situation where a woman sold property worth 200 zuz, and she only received a mana, do we say that she's considered that her ksuba is completely paid out? The Amri law, because we tell her, at Efsadata, you caused this loss to yourself by underselling a piece of property. So ask the Gemara, if so, Shava Mana B'Masayim Nami. If she was talented and she was able to sell a piece of property that's worth 100 zuz, and she received 200 zuz, one, we say, why can't she say, Tema Anar Vachna? It was my good fortune, I'm talented, that I have this sale ability. Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabbi Baravua, Tan Shana Rebbe. What Rebbe is teaching us in our Mishnah is Hakol Balamos. When someone is doing money, business with someone else's money, and he recognizes a profit, extra profit with that money, since it's the money of the principal that brought him this opportunity, the halacha is any extra profit goes to the person who gave the money. Ketanya, Hosifa loy achas yisera. If somebody sent a shliach to buy something in the store, he sent him to buy apples. He sent him to buy 5 pounds of apples. Apples are sold at $1 a pound. And the seller gave the shliach an extra pound. Hakol shliach de Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that it goes to the shliach. Rabbi Yossi Omer Cholkim. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yossi Omer Cholkim, we divide that extra profit equally. And the machlok is how we shine him. Why? Rashi explains, because we really can't figure out who is the one that caused that this extra money should be recognized. Is it the shliach, and therefore he should keep the extra pound, or is it the owner, or is it the person who sent the money for the first 5 pounds? Since we don't know, cholkin. The Rif and the Reinu Tam take a different approach. They say that we're dealing here really with a situation that's a partnership. It's the money of the Mishaleach plus whatever good fortune of the Shliach that combine to get the extra pound. And since this extra pound was recognized through a partnership of these two individuals, it's only right that there should be Cholkin. What would be the Nafkamina between these two Pshatim? In a case where the person who's selling the apples clearly indicates the reason that he's giving the apples is because extra apples because he likes the shliach. According to Rashi's opinion, then there's no question, and all of the extra apples should go to the shliach. However, according to the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rif, even though the seller is clearly indicating that he's giving these extra apples because he likes the shliach, but without the money of the mishaleach, we would have never come to this time, and therefore the Mishaleich is still the title to have. The Mefarshim also point out that even though throughout Shas we typically say Hamotzi Mechaveroi Olav Araya, and since here it's the Shliach that's holding on to the extra apples, certainly he should be the one that should keep him. So the Mefarshim point out that this Halacha of Hamotzi Mechaveroi Olav Araya cannot be applied indiscriminately, and every situation has to be reviewed independently. And here, Chazal said that Cholkin. Ask the Gemara, how could we say that Rabbi Yossi holds Cholkin? But Tanya, we learned another Brisa. Rabbi Yossi Omer Hakol Balamos. Everything belongs to the person who sent the money. Answer the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Bechama Loi Kasha. Kam Bedava Sheyesh Loi Kitzva. In a thing where it's clear that there was extra given. That means the example that we gave, 5 pounds of apples. Apples cost $1 a pound, and he got an extra pound. There, since we're dealing with an item that has a fixed price, and the halacha will be that we divide it. However, kam b'davish en l'kitzva, where does Rabbi Yossi say that the entire profit belongs to the mishleach? We're dealing with an item that has no fixed price, and therefore, since it has no fixed price, we could say that that was the price, and it should all go to the mishleach. Therefore, in the case of our Mishnah, where the widow sold land for more than its actual market price, Rabbi Yossi would rule that the entire profit belongs to the mishleach, belongs to the principal, to the yosaimim, because land is not an item that has a fixed price. And that's why our Mishnah reflects the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Amar Papa, says Rabbi Papa, the halacha is taka, davish yesh lekitzva chalkim, davish ein le, we divide the extra profit between the principal and the shliach, between the mishaleich and the shliach, davish ein lekitzva, something that doesn't have a fixed price like land, hakel bal mos. Ask the Gemara, Maika Mashmalon, what's Rabbi Papa teaching us? Didn't we just learn this? Answers the Gemara, Rabbi Papa is coming to teach us, shnuya de shaninan shnuyahu. The teretz that we gave in explaining the stira in the braisa of Rabbi Yossi should be considered a correct teretz, and the halacha follows that approach. Ibayaluhu, ask the Gemara, Omale, somebody told the shliach, zavnali liska, sell for me a lesach of my field. A lesach is the size of a half a kor. V'ozol v'zavnali kura. And the shliach went and sold an entire kor. What? How do we look at this transaction? My, Moisvel Dvaruhu, do we say that the shliach is just adding to the instructions of the meicher, the liska miyakana? At least the liska, the sale of the liska stands. Oidilma, since he violated, he didn't follow the instruction, Mavel Dvaruhu, is considered that he violated the instructions of the liska nami loikana, and the entire sale is void. Point out the Rishonim. Certainly, if the buyer in this situation says, I was interested in a field the size of a car, and now, because of what happened, that the shliach did not follow the instructions, I'm only going to receive a lischa. And I'm not interested in a lischa. I'm interested in a car. There, everybody would agree that the sale would be void. The question under consideration, explained Rishonim, is a situation where the buyer says, yes, I bought a car, but I'll be alright if I'll just receive a lischa. Do we say that that lischa sale is considered valid, or do we say that's considered void because he didn't follow instructions? Omar Rav Yaakov ibn Harp Koid Mishmed Ravina, Toshma. We know the halacha is that if somebody takes hegdish items, v'shoigig, and uses them, he's considered a moil behegdish. What halacha is that he has to repay hegdish, what the principal plus a fifth plus bringing a carbon asham meilus. But there's a very unique halacha that applies by meila, which we don't have in the rest of Shas, and that is typically the halacha is ein shlich ledvar aveira. So if I ask somebody to do something that's an aveira, and he does it because of my instruction, I don't get the aveira, the shliach gets the aveira. Mi'ila is the exception to the rule, as we're going to learn soon. So here we have a situation where Omar Balbais l'shluchai, and the Balbais tells his messenger, tell him chatich l'archim, give the guest a piece of meat that's hegdish. And obviously it was b'shoidik. V'u'amah t'lu shtayim, and the shliach goes and tells the guest, take two pieces of meat. And the guest actually go and not lushloish, take three pieces of meat. Says the braisa, the halacha is kulam ma'alu. All of them have committed mila. So now the Gemara analyzes this braisa. Iyam b'shlamim moisvel dvarav hava. If we're saying in a situation where the shliach says more than the mishaleach, it's considered that the original shlichus still stands. He's just adding to the shlichus. So we can understand why the Baal Bayis says mo. Because the first piece of meat was done at the Baal Bayis' instruction, and therefore he's over for Mila. Eliamid Mavad Varvhava. It was saying that if a shliach doesn't exactly follow the instructions of the Mishaleach, it's not considered a shlichus anymore. So the question is, Baal Bayis and Maimol, why is the Baal Bayis considered that he committed Mila? For Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah Masech the Mila, HaShliach Shasa Shlichusai, if the shliach carries out the shlichus that he was given, then Baal Bayis Mol, it's considered that the Baal Bayis committed mila. Loy asher shlichusai, but if he didn't follow his shlichus, it's considered that the shliach is mol, that the shliach committed mila. So if in this case, where he didn't exactly follow the instructions, we would say it's maval dvarov, why is the Baal Bayis mol? Answers the Gemara, we can't bring a proof from this case. Hacher ma'iskinen, we're referring to a situation, dam lehu, tlu achs midata shel Baal Bayis. When the shliach told the guest, he told him, the first piece of meat that you're taking is because the homeowner, the Baal Bayis, told you to take it. The achas, the second piece of meat, is midati. So he separated. It isn't one sale. It isn't one kor. It's two separate pieces of meat with a different set of instructions for each piece of meat. The first piece of meat is based on the instructions of the Baal Bayis. The second piece of meat is based on the instruction of the shliach. And therefore, both the Baal Bayis and the shliach committed mila. And then, shaklu inu tlas, they went and they took a third piece of meat on their own cognizance, at their own volition, and therefore they did mila, and that's why the din is that both the shliach, the Baal Bayis, and the guest were all committed mi'ilah.